Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show.
All right, Javier. Javier, we just got through 3 hours of AEW Collision and AEW Battle of the Belts 9. What are your top four candidates for most memorable moment of the show? And it's a joke because there's just one. Okay, sorry. Explain the joke here.
There were two. Sammy almost dying was one of them.
Right.
And I think the FTR. The six man match was also like high up there because I thought it was a really good match.
True. Yes. FTR have good matches a lot. House of Black have good matches a lot. Most memorable? We're gonna remember Sammy for better or for worse.
I don't know because I mean so many stunts. I mean remember probably for the rest of the year, but I mean do you remember all the stunts that you see? That's kind of one of the problems with those kinds of stunts too.
No, this was. I'm not saying this was like super special and point absolutely taken. I mean, you know, so he leaped off of a truss 25 feet in the air, landed on a crash pad. He's a good athlete with good timing, can flip through air. I mean, he's obviously a good natural athlete. He felt confident in what he was doing. And then, you know, was fine in real life, I believe, but it
also
wasn't.
Also did the physics, which also helps.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, you know, Sting doesn't always do the physics. So, you know, it's nice that, yes, Sammy Guevara did the physics, understood where to land and kind of how far you. I definitely give him points for one, just not being scared of heights and willing to leap off of a high place. And two, really calculating the landing and the trajectory perfectly, which he did.
Yeah.
But honestly, point taken. I mean, I'll stand by the fact that FTR and Garcia against House of Black will be remembered less than the Sammy stunt, but that's not to say that the Sammy stunt, A, is worth it, because even with all of our praise for Sammy's physics and athletic ability and the lack of fear of heights, things can go wrong. There's variables there.
Yeah.
Including just Starks like not moving in time. You know, what happens if that happens? But, you know, yes, we've had a lot of stunts with theirs. I do think this one will go down because of the sheer how high Guevara climbed. But I could be wrong. I mean,
it'll be used in videos and stuff like that going forward. That's for sure. I mean, I'm also playing the part of devil's advocate. So.
Fair enough. Yes. But honestly, you picked two good things. You know, there's a big stunt in that brawl. Actually, I think another thing that I'll remember in a bad way is the fact that Chris Jericho put Ricky Starks' face on a copy machine, put the lid over his head, and the whole time he did this, there's a sheet of paper in the tray. Like, it was there when he got there. And then he, like, supposedly takes a photocopy of Starks' face, and then that sheet of paper that was there to start with, he picks up, and it's a picture of Starks' face. So there's sorcery going on here somewhere. That is a magic copy machine, because it had predicted the future, that Starks' face would be pressed up against the glass cover.
It's actually funny, because actually what I got from that scene when I was watching was not that, but like, man, this is the perfect time to actually do the staple spot and staple his face to his face.
Oh, his face to his face?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, all right.
We're different people, Wid.
What's that?
We're different people, Wid.
Yes, absolutely. And then I also think a memorable moment will be whatever went through – I don't know what went through Jericho's head, but he put the traffic cone on his head afterwards and then went like, and it's like, what is that? He just loses like, you know, 200 cool points, whatever he had left. And cool points. He lost a bunch of them with doing that. I mean, these brawls in the street are kind of fun, but it's like you can only do so much, especially in the middle of winter. And then, you know, you can't, like, I mean, hop in a river. I guess it depends on your location. You could if you're in Miami, probably. And then, you know, they brawl in the near catering, and there's mustard. And then they finally got into the venue and finish the match with that big stunt. I mean, again, it's not my favorite style of match, but it did break up the 3 hours. And as Tony Schiavone said, this is entertaining.
one of the breaks, it was hilarious because there's a during one part of the fight, there was, I think it was like a beer or something that had spilled on the floor, and Shivani goes, "Oh, they need to be careful." and then he caught himself and goes, "Oh well, I mean, this is a really dangerous match."
Oh gosh, yeah. What are you gonna do? I mean, there's spilled beer, so be careful before you hop off a 25-foot truss onto a stage and kill yourself. Yeah, I mean, you know, going into these three-hour, you know, collision, Battle of the Belts things. I mean, when Battle of the Belts was first announced as a thing, I was kind of hoping to be like, you know, quarterly Clash of Champions to complement the quarterly pay-per-views, and it's just turned into a loaded Rampage. And I say Rampage only because it's one-hour format. You know, but it's just an extension of Collision by an hour, but with belts on the line. But belts are on the line a lot in AEW. There was a time where seeing a title match on TV was a big deal. It's been decades, but that was once a thing. That was just very rare. When Clash of the Champions became a thing for WCW, it was still in that era of most wrestling, almost all wrestling, was pre-taped. Squash-based format, and very few title matches on television. So Clash of the Champions, WCW Clash of the Champions, as a regular event, was a big deal because it was A, live, which, by the way, we get 9 to 10 hours a week of, most weeks, just in the big two, not even counting, you know, Impact running a pay-per-view. Well, that's pay-per-view, it's not with Impact. Not counting the occasions when Rampage is live, I'll say that. And so it was a big deal, you know, Clash of the Champions. You get to see live championship matches on cable. That was a novelty then. Battle of the Belts, a derivative of a derivative in another era. It's only 1 hour. And it ended with Orange Cassidy against Preston Vance. Like, they go in reverse order, like Saturday Night's Main Events back in the day, where the bigger match is on first. No doubt Cassidy was winning this one, especially when Strong, Caven, and Bennett came out and sat and watched. They're already promoting the next title defense by Orange Cassidy against Roderick Strong, even before the bell rang for this one. So, you know, I mean, it is what it is. It was, you know, how would you rank the overall three-hour experience, Javier? Moderately entertaining, above expectations, a slog to get through? Where are you on it?
Well, this is actually only the second Battle of the Belts I've actually watched live. and really only outside of one other one, just because there was a match I wanted to watch on there, which I watched after the fact. After the first one, when they did the second one, I saw the card for the second one. I'm like, okay, this is just like Rampage, but with championship on the line. And most of these are, you know who's going to win. It's not like they're top people.
Right.
The only one that was at question was the tag team title match. That was the only one that was, that you thought it was going to happen because, you know, Julia was not going to lose, and neither was Orange Cassidy.
Yeah.
You know, so, but overall, I think for the most part, it just felt like how I feel like after watching ROH pay-per-view. Like, I really don't care what's going on, but I enjoyed the matches.
Yeah, I think that's fair, a fair way to put it. The collision, the 2 hours of collision did feel almost like a pre-show to Battle of the Belts, and then Battle of the Belts was like a really short reverse order, low-end pay-per-view. But there was a lot to the whole execution of Collision that did feel at times like a pre-show. Talk about that a little bit, Javier, and how that played out.
Let me grab my notes. because that is how memorable it was. Because when you, like, you're right, because like the Lance Archer Dutch Cage Gates of Agony ROH match, that was almost like that would have been on a pre-show of a pay-per-view. The Dusty and Willie Mack thing again, and the fact that we got like a clean win on that one goes into like the how clear Tony Khan's booking is, where it's like I wrote in my notes at that point when Dustin won was, okay, so which title is he going to be challenging for? And sure
exactly,
enough,
yeah.
Bit later, I'm like, you know, he challenges Chris and Cage. So it, you know, so that was again. Hangman versus J.D. Drake. Again, why is this on the show? Oh, because they want to give Hangman Page a match so that when the official match against Joe, because remember Joe said, oh, you got to string some wins together. Well, here's a win for Hangman Page, so he can make a case for Joe. And it's obvious that it's basically reverse booking. They're going to want to get here, so now we're just going to feed you a few guys just so we can say that we did the work. The same thing with Hook. Hook felt like I wouldn't be surprised if the Hook getting a match here at the end, like sort of, you know, in, quote unquote impromptu, was more of Tony Khan, that whole thing with the whole Twitter stuff that he's like, oh well, let's give him another victory so that it looks like he's you know, and it was a strong victory against a guy whose name I didn't even get.
That's the thing. It's not a statement win. The quality of opposition average did not go up beating Kevin Matthews.
He should have been doing a lot more of that, and this would have been, like, a lot harder had he had just, like, beaten – like, had this happened, like, right after his feud with Jack Perry, you know, that would be a lot more. I think ultimately the people who did complain, which were very small because this has never even meant – you know, I'm not glued to wrestling Twitter, but, you know, some stuff filters into me. The whole thing of Hook is, you know, is Hook a worthy champion? Never filtered to me. So literally not many people were talking about it. So that whole thing was just like a cluster, you know what. So, but he opened it up to actually, for me anyway, well, is it worth it for Hook? Is it worth it for Hook, you know, in the way they did it, or they're just, or does it feel like they're just feeding him to Samoa Joe?
Exactly.
So
I'm going to pause you because if you just take me literally and run through everything on Collision, we're going to wrap up in like 15 minutes here.
You're right.
So well, let me pause you and let me introduce us formally. And then we'll go to the phone banks and see if we have any emails. And I want to explore the hype for Dynamite 2 and some of the developments in that regard, which, you know, there are some newsworthy aspects of the show we haven't covered yet. Let's do that. But first, introducing the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Saturday, January 13th, 2024. And I'm Wade Keller, host of the show. And I'm the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the newsletter, the website, and many podcasts. And I am joined by Javier Machado, a PW Torch contributor. He writes pay-per-view and premium live event previews, a lot of P's, for pwtorch.com, our main website. I hope you're checking that out every day for current news, live coverage, cool flashback articles, editorials, and special features you won't find anywhere else. That's pwtorch.com. Javier, welcome.
Thank you for having me on. I did have a sugary drink, which I usually don't do, and so that might be why I'm firing off like a...
Well, I did just sort of throw to you, and then you started running down the show, and I'm like, well, wait, is he gonna talk for like 22 minutes? And then
I probably would have, yeah.
That's funny. Well, I'm glad I broke in then and gave you a hard time. Anyway, it's late on a Saturday night. We are a little looser than we are even on Friday nights, and certainly more than Monday and Wednesday. So if you're live streaming the show and you want to participate, we invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on the switchboard so that we know you want to be brought onto the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. If you're wondering if you've downloaded the show after our live stream, thank you. But if you want to join us live, all you have to do is go to pwtorch.com, our main website, pwtorch.com, and click on my TV reports on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday nights, Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision, respectively. And at the top and bottom, there's a link to our live stream. We start roughly 5 minutes after the shows go off the air, so we don't make you wait too long, and we get rolling. There's a link there. You can call or stream on the internet to listen in. And you can also find us, if it's easier, by going to wadekellerpostshow.com and then navigate to the link to the live stream. All right. Good. I think I took care of the stuff we have to take care of in the intro. So let's shift to our caller here. Don from St. Louis is on hold. Dom, thank you for calling. Thank you for holding. What's on your mind about Collision and Battle of the Belts tonight?
Good evening. How are you guys doing? I felt the 3 hours flew by, especially for an AEW show.
Cool. Yeah.
So what do you think about – I feel like they did a better job with the open challenge with Adam Copeland, with Leo Moriarty, because they gave a little background on him and they explained his character. What do you think about the open challenges Adam Copeland been doing lately?
Yeah, so mixed feelings, because I agree that they put effort into getting you kind of psyched up for the match and understanding, you know, what was at stake. The problem with the open challenges is you know Adam Copeland's going to win because it's the open challenge is being presented as him racking up some wins to get a title match that he deserves anyway against Christian Cage. And so he's not going to lose. And so far, it's, you know, Cliff Garrison, it's Liam Moriarty. You know Copeland's going to win. And one of the criticisms of AEW, and in particular AEW Collision, but it's been going on since Dynamite started with Cody Rhodes having overly long matches with mid-carders, is they have stars have overly long matches with mid-carders. And it took Copeland 11 minutes to beat Moriarty, which if you're going to consistently push and feature Moriarty and do what they did tonight with him, where you tout the matches, the effort that he's put in against top-level opponents, like they talked about, you know, he really took Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley to the limit. If you do that, if this is a way to get Lee Moriarty pushed, it's like, hey, now he's going to be on every week, and we're going to really consistently make sure that you're invested in his journey. Great, losing to Adam Copeland in 11 minutes is worth it. But if Griff Garrison and Lee Moriarty just sort of disappear, the next time we see them at some random throwaway match on Rampage and 6 weeks go by and they don't have a win and there's no more character development, it's just sort of wasted time, to be honest. I mean, it's just filled 11 minutes with some good action, and it was good action, but it doesn't serve a larger purpose. We know Copeland's on a path to be a veteran who works with a bunch of younger guys and gives them 10 minutes of back and forth action before he eventually gets his hands on Christian again. It's a little bit spinning your wheels. It's like, well, we want to utilize Copeland because we're paying him and he's healthy and he can have good matches and younger wrestlers can sort of have a cool moment getting a little rub from sharing the ring with him. But if there's no follow-up, what's the point? And if it's all just to lead to Copeland getting yet another match with Christian, it does feel a little like spinning wheels. So there's some good there's some good in the moment. What I'm saying is have something come out of this where the people who are getting the chance to work a longer match or a competitive match with Copeland, have it be a springboard for them. Pick them strategically. Not everybody. I don't know how many of these he's going to do, but some of them, it should lead to something else. Javier, over to you for your thoughts on this.
Yeah, give me a second. I need to cross off everything I was going to say about Hangman Page and J.D. Drake.
yes.
Because both of those matches have is exactly what you said, minus, you know, obviously the veteran aspect in the Hangman Page J.D. Drake match. But you're bringing in the people who are like, and I'm not saying this to be insulting, it's just the way they've been booked. The bottom of your card. This would make more sense if you wanted to use it to elevate, say, Garcia, Yuta, you know, someone that's, you know, on that level. Because, you know, when are we going to see Griff again? When are we going to see Lee again? When are we going to see the people that he's wrestling? I don't even remember when was the last time I saw them. So, yeah, I totally agree with everything you said there, Wade. So, and again, it's just like on his path. Or you know, like, because I think they're trying to get the John Cena angle thing, ruthless aggression thing, but, you know, you're not going to get it if you don't follow up on that.
Yeah, Don, back to you. Any thoughts on what Javier and I had to say about that?
I feel like you guys were pretty fair on that. I feel like if Adam Copeland, I feel like he's doing what Punk wanted to do, but he's doing more, less, trying to get himself over in the moment. You understand what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
more give
yep.
and take.
Now on isolation, I think it's a neat moment for these wrestlers to actually be wrestling with someone who's probably their hero too. So I do, that's an aside as opposed to like, you know, building something. So like separating it from everything else, it's a cool thing to see, you know, this guy wrestle with someone who might be the future. But again, you need to follow up if you're going to actually build up on them, because otherwise it's just like, you know, an exhibition match, basically.
Yeah. What else, Don?
So what do you think about the whole, like the idea that Hook is really, his record is going to speak for itself? Like, I feel like they should have presented, like, Hook is a young up-and-comer who need to be put in the main event no matter what. It don't matter what the record is. Are you going to make it or break it in this business? You think that should have been the best take instead of doing the record?
Yeah, Javier, evaluate the sort of quick turnaround build for Hook as a challenger, and if there was a different path they could have taken, and how, I mean, the record is the record. It's impressive, 29-1 now, but it's a little insulting to the audience. I'm deciding if that's too harsh of a word. It's a little damages AEW's credibility to act like the record is all that counts instead of quality of opposition. And to me, this gets to a larger point I wanted to make about this 3 hours, which is it was a lot of just pointing the camera at the ring, and you got ring entrances and then they wrestle. There are a few promos on Collision, a little video package on Lee Moriarty, a couple highlight packages. It wasn't void of some production work, but if you're going into a match of Hook versus Joe, I mean, you don't have to pretend Joe is at Collision. Like I think they did with a couple segments here with people who weren't really there, but I would have liked to have them. I wish they would have done more to build up Hook by showing the wins that he has that are impressive against good opponents. Now, the problem is I haven't looked at his record. I probably should have by now. It keeps crossing my mind. I want to see the 28, now 29 people he's defeated. But do they have – can their production team put something together that shows Hook having statement wins and or at least a highlight package where you're like, wow, okay, if he does that to Joe, then – maybe we're going to see this, like, you know, Joe is a transitional champion and they're getting in the business of promoting Hook as a top guy. And I don't think they've told Hook's story in a way where almost anybody watching is thinking, yeah, this is going to be a big moment with some suspense when it comes to the world title. Maybe it shouldn't be. I mean, I don't want to counter my own argument. Maybe you pick and choose your moments. And when it comes to credibility, they shouldn't portray Hook as a real threat. But I think there's a third option, which is we don't think Hook's going to win. You have three announcers. You can tell the story of different people with different perspectives. And I don't think they did a great job during the Hook match doing this, which is someone going, come on, Hook is great, but he hasn't exactly beat top-tier people. Just put it out there. Say it. And he's winning his matches quickly, but we haven't seen what happens when he gets taken into the deep end in a longer match, which Joe is probably which is probably what's going to be needed to defeat Samoa Joe. Hook is young. He's purported to have good cardio, but we haven't seen him in long matches very often, if at all. So have a conversation that feels legit and sports-like, which is what are Hook's strengths that Joe should be worried about? A lot of people are skeptical, rightfully so, that Hook is not ready for this. What does Hook think he knows that should cause Joe to not be overconfident going in? I just think there's a realistic discussion based on Hook's record that they can frame it and analyze it and dissect it in a way where you're acknowledging the reality that people know, which is it's not strong quality of opposition, but parse it in a way where now you're sort of intrigued because they've owned that, but now they've kind of framed it in a way that makes you go, but what if we can't change? You know, it's like if an NBA team starts off 31-2, you can go, well, they have more home games than anyone else, and they haven't had any injuries, and they beat some teams who were on back-to-backs, and those other teams said, you can make all the excuses in the world. They're still 31-2. That's crazy good. And so I'd like to hear more of that. And I know the idea was we're going to put Hook against a bigger wrestler tonight, and he's going to beat him and beat him quickly, and he's going to show he has the power to suplex him. And that was good, but it just wasn't enough. To me, that was like one of, you know, five things that they should have done. It was like, you know, 1/5 or 1/8 is much discussion about a world title defense on Dynamite, which they don't do very often. So those are some of my thoughts. Javier, I'll throw to you for a reaction of what I had to say and anything else about what Don brought up.
Well, I've got the list of Hook's stuff here. So I'm not going to necessarily read every single one, but these are the big matches where people would watch, which would be either a named Dynamite or a pay-per-view. He had a feud with QT Marshall's group at the time, which was Aaron Solo and a bunch of people, that culminated in a match with QT Marshall at Revolution 2022, which was his, you know, basically his real coming out party, basically.
So you're working your way up from the bottom.
Yeah, yeah. So that. So, and then after that, his next big one was being Ricky Starks for the FTW. So after that, let me see, we're, in Grand Slam, that was a tag team match, never mind, let's see who is a big name here, Matt Hardy in a Dynamite, he beat Matt Hardy for, defending the FTW one, he had a, AEW House Rules, he defeated Ethan Page, in, this March, not this March, March, 2023, let's see, yeah, so a feud with Ethan Page. He had a bunch of matches with Ethan Page. And then his feud with Jack Perry, which is, I think, his one loss. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. Then he had a match with Rocky Romero on Rampage. So, yeah, I mean, everything else, I'm talking about, like, people like Aaron Solo, Blake Lee, Serpentico, J.D. Drake, Zach Clayton, Angelo Parker, Ari Daivari, Lee Moriarty, Exodus Prime, Balaam Lynx. Peter Avalon,
yeah, so,
want to throw him
so
out there?
If they, if they put a package together and they just said, hey,
yeah.
Hook has defeated a former ROH champion in Matt Hardy. He's defeated current tag team champion Ricky Starks. He dispatched QT Marshall, a respected veteran. I mean, I don't know if they want to talk about him now, but they, you know, they could. Who was one of the last people you mentioned? Who was? Oh, Ethan Page.
Well, and then throwing Ethan Page around the ring, who's a big guy, and I know that he that because you know that's kind of his thing, his suplexes and stuff. So showing him manhandling him.
Yeah, and you know tout Ethan Page. So you've got something to work with there. But once you acknowledge that, it's not an impressive list, but those are 3-4 worthy veterans. And so then what you do is you have Nigel or whomever go. That's not Joe. Samoa Joe's a level better, with all due respect to all of them, at this moment in time, you know, Samoa Joe is the world champion. And yes, Ricky Starks, that's an impressive win. He's a tag team champion right now. Matt Hardy, later in his, he's late, I don't know if you want to start deconstructing how over the hill, so that, you know, bad is or whatever, but basically shows, have an announcer show some skepticism, and then have Shivani or Kelly push back and go, you know what, that's why Hook wanted to step up. Because he wants to face top-level competition. We just don't know how good he is yet. This happens in the world of MMA. It happens in the NFL. You go 6-0 against a bunch of teams who aren't going to make the playoffs. The seventh game, you go and you face a perennial playoff team or last year's Super Bowl champ. That's how you find out how good you are. That's what we're going to find out on Wednesday. I just don't – they're not leaning into this in that way in the presentation of it. And again, this just gets to the creative – there's creative ways to hype matches, and in AEW's done some of it, WWE's done some of it, TNA has done it. It's not like I'm just making this up as something that isn't done, but like you can do creative things to build up a match, and I would have over the course of 3 hours done more to talk about that match on Wednesday and gone back to it, and even have like a brief panel discussion with like three veterans talking about it, or have wrestlers approached in catering backstage going, is Hook in over his head? What do you think? And get sound bites from different wrestlers, you know, where you have this roaming reporter. It could be Lexi or Renee asking people, what do you think is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? Make it feel like a big deal. Own the reality that this is Hook's biggest challenge yet, but get people excited about the fact that he's never faced anyone of Joe's caliber. He might win. He might lose. He'll probably lose, but we don't know till it happens. And I just felt they kind of phoned it in and said, we'll put him against a big guy. And he'll be out there for 2 minutes. And that's it. And I just wish they would have done more. You know, it was their last chance to hype the match other than what they do on Dynamite and the lead-up.
Yeah, and they very well may actually play that video that you're describing on Dynamite. And it's like, but you kind of wouldn't make more sense to do it like before that to hype people up to go watch it, particularly when you have the Battle of the Belts today, which was, you know, you would hope is a draw.
What do you think they might hype on Dynamite?
That video that you just described talking about like the stuff that he's done may very well be something that they do before the actual match on Dynamite, but would make more sense if they're hyping up here.
And I ask you that because I doubt they'll do that. I mean, it's just not in Tony Khan's DNA to do that typically. So if they do that, I'll be impressed. And I mean, I'll be happy. I'd be happier if they did it last Wednesday, tonight, and next Wednesday. I think if you put a world title match on TV, You want to make it feel more important than anything else that's going on. And one of the issues, you know, we talk about, you know, how long it took Hangman Page to beat Drake, how long it took. It just what, you know, there's even last week on Collision, Todd Martin talked about on the fix and the flagship, how many matches where you knew the outcome going in, but it still took forever to get there. And everybody is sort of at, like, there's this narrow water level that a lot of people are in, or people who are way below someone else in the ring gets extended time to be competitive with them. And there's so many titles, there's so many championship matches, and there's just so many feuds going on. You got to pick one, two, or three and just really elevate them, make them feel like a bigger deal. And, you know, they don't do that. I would have talked more about the Young Bucks showing up at the end of Dynamite. That would have been one of my headline stories. I would have weaved that into commentary during some of these matches, not just said, here's a picture of the Bucks and they're going to be on Dynamite talking. Tony Khan's not good about making you realize what the, like the old thing I heard about Kevin Dunn, and I've said a lot over the years, he wanted people remembering 2.5 things after every WWE TV show. And maybe it was more a Vince McMahon thing. I think it was a Kevin Dunn thing. And, you know, there's like two main things and then kind of a third thing you hope people think of too. That just doesn't happen often enough in AEW. And coming out of tonight with a 3-hour show, I don't know how many people are watching. The football game wasn't super competitive. So maybe the viewership will be better, you know, as a result of that. But no matter what your viewership is, do the best job you can. Make Hook Joe feel like the biggest thing going on. Have the return of the Young Bucks challenging Sting to retirement match. Talk about that. Find a way to weave that into the show. And then pick kind of a third thing that's not as important that you're also pushing. It doesn't mean you can't do all the other things, but make sure you're just – there's these 2.5 main things you want people to think about as a way to kind of challenge yourself to have certain things rise above – just sort of an entertaining, steady 3 hours that we saw. And that's largely what we got. It was an entertaining, steady 3 hours with a couple peak moments here and there with the brawl at the beginning of Battle of the Belts. But, yeah, there's more you can do than to just present matches. And AEW, I think, is really underachieving when it comes to the aspect that I just talked about.
Yeah, because, I mean, as far as like the experience today, because you did ask me that earlier, yeah. I thought it was just by itself, it was just fantastic. Like in terms of like the action that you saw, and you know, I liked the you know, the craziness of the brawl, because I actually do like that kind of match. You know, like maybe two a year, and
right.
It's been a while,
yeah,
since they've done it. So I do like that kind of thing. You know, so overall by itself, but like, when you're basically trying to create a tapestry with your company of story that expands beyond what you're doing today. And that's the thing. It doesn't feel like stuff, these matches, like really what, as much as I liked that trios match, with FTR and House of Black stuff and a lot of stuff there that I liked, like, does it really mean anything?
Right.
You know,
yep.
You know, I really, you know, there's some stuff I really like, but a lot of it's like, did it really mean anything? Did it really push the story of AEW forward? Which I think that's my criticism of it, because yeah, I mean, as far as the stuff they do in the ring, and I tell you what, like, I wish I were there at the show watching that. You know, that's like, you know, that particularly that six way was like, that'd be like an incredibly fun match to watch live. But, you know, And I could see that every single week they have that, but at some point, like I think for the TV viewing audience, you kind of want something that, oh, what is going to be the next thing I'm going to watch other than just watch another match? Because I've lately have been skipping an occasional AEW Collision or Dynamite. I don't even watch Rampage. I skip them because I'm like, okay, there's going to be so little important stuff that's going to go, I could just hear the fix and I'm going to be caught up, you know. Because because it's not like dense in terms of storytelling and moving forward. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of my thing. Like, and again, I know I'm sounding negative because I enjoyed today's experience, but you know, it for building to the future, what did you do?
Well, and that's the thing. Tony Khan puts on enjoyable shows. That,
yeah,
is, and we could spend, you know, an hour, hour and a half on post shows, talking over and over again about, hey, this we shouldn't take for granted that there's good wrestlers that Tony Khan's assembled. They're getting some time to tell, to have good matches. There's a real wide range of styles, but it'd be redundant. Like, what matters is what does it do to elevate the personalities, the wrestlers themselves, the characters. Are you emphasizing things that will help expand the drawing power and the star power of the core group of wrestlers that you most believe in. When you give TV time to someone, it's a time well spent that you build on. And you know, I mean, are there too many titles? Yes. But do you make the top titles matter? Are you doing things that cause people to want to buy tickets who are beyond the group of fans, and there's 3,000 and change in every city, who want to go see AEW because they're going to see 2-3 hours of good wrestling? But how do you get beyond that? You get beyond it by making a core group of stars feel like you need to be in their presence, that they're rock stars, and you're part of something that matters. And those wrestlers are on a journey where there's success and failure. There's steps forward and steps back, and it's an ongoing saga. It isn't just, oh, let's have some dream matches or some novel matches and give people who are good workers a chance to shine against some veterans who they never wrestled before, like the Edge Open Challenge type thing. Make it mean more. And that's where the weakness is, and that's where we focus on the show on that, because the goal, if you're a wrestling promoter, is to grow your business, and they found a steady, consistent, reliable brand, which is you're going to see good wrestlers having good matches most of the time in AEW at a higher percentage than most other wrestling companies in the last forever. You don't even have to pick a time frame. But what do they do next to grow? And what do you do to, again, I got specific with Hook and Joe. There's things you can do where people coming out of tonight are like, God, I got to talk to my friends about Joe and Hook. They've given me things to talk about and to think about and to dream about and to post online about. You didn't really get that. They're just telling you the match is happening and you got to see Hook beat somebody quickly who's bigger than him. That's 1 out of 10, you know, if you're scoring the hype for the match. There's you know, other things that they could and should be doing. Don, I'll throw it back to you. If you want to follow up on that, or if you want to bring anything else up.
I just want to bring up, I've been noticing, like, since 2023, they've been more consistent with certain acts on AEW television. Because, like Hangman on TV appearing on Dynamite and Collision, that's kind of a rarity lately. Because I've been noticing, been noticing, like more talent been appearing in both shows regularly and more consistent in more weeks, like Swerve. I've been on television consistently since probably Double or Nothing. Have you noticed that? Is this the consistency of certain acts on television besides, like, that we almost used to, like, anybody else type character?
Collision's only been on the air for 5 or so months, whatever it's been. So there's not a big history, and it started off as sort of semi-exclusive, but not entirely, in terms of top-tier talent. It was Punk and FTR. Miro segments. Who am I missing, Javier? Who are Scorpio Sky for a little while? So it sort of had a little sense of top tier exclusivity for a while, and now there's more blending. But even Danny Garcia was like, you know what? I think I need to be here on Collision in order to grow. Like, he made it sound like being on Collision is different than Dynamite, but that's not something AEW's ever, like, overtly said or acknowledged. It's been something we've talked about. It's been talked about off television, but AEW has never made it sound like, well, some people are only on Collision or primarily on Collision. You have to sort of pick up on that. But when you have, you know, and it seems like FTR's home is Collision, but occasionally they're on Dynamite. But I don't know. There's a lot of wrestlers over the course of a month who appear on Dynamite, Rampage, and Collision. And I just don't know obviously there's more casual viewers in AEW's audience. There's people who are more hardcore and more casual, for lack of a better term, more ardent and less so. But there's not as many mainstream casual fans as WWE has. But even the more come-and-go, not super into following it every single day, AEW Dynamite and Collision viewer, I don't think they're thinking a lot about the differentiation between who appears on what show and how often. I don't know. Javier, what do you think about that? Do you think you're seeing a little bit more floating where top wrestlers are on both shows these days, kind of in the post-punk era where there was, you know, real solid differentiation if you're looking for it?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple just people that seem like they're not allowed on Dynamite, with, like, FTR and Miro are the two primary ones. Most of the blending, though, that I've seen has been – they've been, you know, it's people who have been wrestling on Dynamite but then cutting their promos on Collision to set up what they're going to do on Dynamite the following week. You know, so – and I think that's really what's kind of, you know, created that kind of, you know, like, deviation, you know, or like that made it seem obvious, I guess. I kind of wish Garcia had just said, you know, I got to spend more time on Collision as opposed to making it seem like there's an actual roster, you know,
right.
division of rosters. I could have sworn that Danielson was a Collision guy. Didn't he take over like a Punk spot? It's just that I think with the New Japan stuff he's been doing that I think that might be why we haven't seen him. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, do you want a more harder split? What? Because I'm kind of like of two minds on that.
I am of two minds on it too. What I don't want them is to talk about it like it's there and we're supposed to pick up on it, but not really own it fully. Yeah, I mean, I guess ultimately I would vote for a hard split because I think you're going to end up with it seeming like Collision is the B show to Dynamite if you have basically the same pool of talent appearing because Collision just doesn't have the lineup at the level that Dynamite has. And so to avoid that, I would do a fair – and I think they have a deep enough roster to do this and would kind of force them to get the most out of some of the talent they're not getting the most out of. If you did a 60-40 or 50-50 split among the top women and the top men, and then it would give viewers a more definitive reason to watch both shows because you can only see, you know, Chris Jericho and the Don Callis family and Keith Lee and – whoever, you know, on Collision. And, you know, like I made the pitch, you know, having like kind of quarterly roster shakeups, you know, you just segment the year and go, all right, you know, we're going to put everyone in we're going to put a bunch of people in a Tumblr or we're going to have a, you know, individual drafts, where Jerry Lynn and Arn Anderson are in charge or whoever, you know, just doing, you know, drafting wrestlers. And I like more structure than less. And I like the notion of giving Collision a chance to feel like an equal to Dynamite. And it just isn't if they have the exact same pool of talent. Don, back to you. Anything else?
Yeah. I'm just sorry to get off topic with me, but I know you haven't catch the news, but Jack Perry has returned tonight. What do you think about the idea of like maybe him showing back up in AEW soon or whether maybe feuding with Moxley? This is kind of teased it tonight. What do you think?
Javier, how do you feel about Jack Perry coming back? I mean, I think he's been gone long enough. And yeah, what do you think of him returning to TV and how much should he be pushed upon his comeback?
Well, I mean, the one thing I have noticed is I think there have been three occasions now of somebody getting thrown through a car windshield since he's been gone. So I don't know what that means. Because I think you had Big Show go through through the glass window. You had today someone go through the glass through poor Rhett Titus's car window, and there was what was the other one? Oh, and when the Devil's group attacked Hangman Page, they put him through a window. So I don't know if that's them kind of like rubbing his nose in it or not, but I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I'd be fine for him to come back maybe with like a different look, you know, kind of thing. And like, you know, cause now he's been gone long enough that you can repackage him and put him in. But I would figure out what you're going to do with him. I don't want him to just come back so he could just have a couple matches and stuff, just either put him in a program where the win or lose, don't care, but, you know, have him do something.
Yeah. I think enough time's gone by. I think if you had Perry return and just like, pushed him harder than you pushed him before. Just because, you know, he's seen as the guy who created a ruckus in a lot of news with Punk. You know, you're sort of rewarding something that caused a pretty big cardiac event in AEW. But, you know, I don't think that what he did was egregious enough that he should be, you know, his career should be over. But I think I'd ease him back in a smaller role and not have him just leapfrog a bunch of people who didn't cause, you know, their top paid guy to have to be fired. You know, I don't think Perry's talented, but I don't think he's a generational talent where you make an exception and, you know, play favorites. I just think you have him come back and see if, you know, for 6 to 12 months, he loses most of his matches. You don't have to bury him. They can be competitive matches and you just have him go out there and be a workhorse. And you know, and tell a different kind of story that doesn't involve him getting an instant top tier main event, OMG, go viral. I can't believe he said that type moment, like tearing up his AEW contract at the New Japan show. So to me, ease him in if he's coming back to AEW. If he's coming back and they're just going to push him in a top feud, I mean, fine, but I would choose a different route. I would sacrifice whatever buzz you think you're going to get from him and plan to have him earn his way back, not leapfrog other people who weren't disruptive in that way. Javier, anything you want to add?
My framing of that? What I'm saying is just, but some like something like in the mid tier or even ROH, put him in ROH for a while.
Yeah, that could work too. Yeah. Don, anything else you want to add before we let you go?
One last thing. I like the dynamic they've been doing with Daddy Magic and Danny Garcia, because it's kind of like a father-son relationship in a way that I feel like it's like Danny Magic is like us, the fans, just wanting him to do better and stop doing this same old stick. And he's kind of listening towards him, but he's not listening towards him. It's like something that, like, uniquely, like a story that actually AEW is kind of doing well with Danny Magic constantly on commentary during his matches. What do you guys think?
I like Menard on commentary, and I like Garcia, you know, the shift in his character and his presentation, and they're leaning into where his strengths are, and I think he should be a babyface, and teaming with the FTR is good. So I like that. I'm not sure where this all leads with Menard, you know, encouraging him to not be a sports entertainer, even though that was sort of the whole, I don't know. There's aspects of this that I couldn't quite explain to someone who just dropped off of AEW TV for 4 months and says, hey, update me on that. I'm not sure that I could explain it where they'd be like, are you sure you're explaining it right? I'd be like, I am, but I know it doesn't make a lot of sense. But that said, even if I can't explain it, I kind of like that Menard is, like this veteran mentor of Garcia, trying to get him on a different track. And I don't really know where it's going and how Angela Parker fits in. Javier, what do you think?
Yeah, he pretty much said on one of the times he was in commentary to try to clear up that question, the sports entertainer stuff, was more along the lines like the sports entertainment is for when you're not in the actual match. Once you're in the match, you need to pay attention to what you're doing. So, you know, I think that's like their best attempt to clean that up. I think ultimately, because he's been the target, because he's been the target of Brody King's attacks a few times now. So I don't know exactly how they're going to, because it almost seems like primed for Garcia to avenge Menard. It kind of seems like what they're doing. But I don't know if this is going to basically blow up, you know, move over to like a full-blown feud between the Parker, Menard, and Garcia against the House of Torture. So one of those two things. But it really seems like, because I think it's like the second time Menard's been targeted by Brody King. So I just don't know what's going to go on there. The one thing, as much like that trios match there, the one thing I think that was a wasted opportunity is I think that I would have liked for them to actually give Garcia the win there. Let him get the pin, because, I mean, if you're going to finish it off with House of Torture. Oh my God! I just called it. Everybody calling it House of Torture, or did I call it House of Black? House of Black. With the whole thing with House of Black, attacking them after the match to get their heat back. I think you could have just had should have finished it with the spot where they were going to do the Power and Glory spot, and they pushed. I think it was Cash who was going to be doing the splash part of it, and they pushed him off. And then Garcia jumped in to follow it up. I thought that would have been like a great ending to the match and give Garcia the win, and then, you know, go on from there and they get the heat back, because, you know, the story they've been telling with Garcia through the classic is that he's trying to re-find himself and get that. I think that would have been a good pin on Aleister Black, and then Aleister Black would just lose his, you know, bleep and then, you know, beat the hell out of him to move on, you know, to get the heat back. And that would have been a good moment for Garcia at that point. You know, so I thought it was kind of like a wasted opportunity there.
All right, Don, I appreciate the call.
All right, thank you.
Okay, so yeah, Don was good walking us through a number of aspects of this show. I want to look at the main event, the last match with Orange Cassidy and Preston Vance, and Roderick Strong with Taven and Bennett at ringside. They're setting up Cassidy and Strong. I want to get to Jay White too in a minute. Well, anyway, I'll focus on this for the moment. Is Strong? Do you think they did a good job setting up Strong as the next opponent for Orange Cassidy, and broaden it out in terms of how they're following up with the Adam Cole Devil Group, following the MJF storyline in the awkwardness, sort of the jarring suddenness of MJF just being gone? And now the whole thing just shifts to, I mean, it just feels like we're back. They come out, and yes, they were part of a big angle, but the thing that I'm getting to, and I'm sort of answering my own question, but you can push back on it if you think, is they basically taken Roderick Strong and moved him from kind of the boring mid-card guy who will give you a good match to this sort of entertaining, grating heel, now back to the kind of bland mid-card guy. They had that weird reaction in the promo tonight. It was just odd, his reaction. I just don't know who Roderick Strong is right now with everything that we've gone through. And I don't really see a lot of remaining elements of who Roderick Strong had been the last few months when he got way more TV time than he got previously.
Yeah, Roderick Strong is one of those wrestlers who always feel like they're acting. he doesn't feel like, you know, authentic, because it's always a thing. And it doesn't help that he still, you know, when he was doing the shtick of, you know, when he was just like basically a comedy act, keeping the whole, you know, yelling the person's name to remind you of that and then taking a serious tone, that just does not work for me. You know, just if you're going to be serious, but don't call back to the funny stuff or the attempt to be funny stuff. I like him as a worker, but yeah, I mean, I've never been really big fan of Roderick Strong when he's been on the quote unquote sports entertainment side of things, you know, or the, you know, promo side of things. He's just, that's why he's always worked for me best when he was like with someone who's really charismatic as a wrestler cutting the promos. And he just, yeah, you know, that's pretty much it. And yeah, I mean, with the whole, I've been listening to all the stuff you've been saying about the, whole, the Devil's Group, the Undisputed Kingdom. And I'm like, I get the idea of having a comedy group and then they turn around and say, no, we're not really a comedy group. I didn't do the research this. I was meaning to, after listening to The Fix, to find out exactly, when the Jay White, attack happened, compared to when you started seeing the Cole hanging out with Strong and the rest of the Kingdom. Because if the Jay White attack happened first, then you know that Cole was involved in that because he was the Devil, which means that all the skits that you saw with them at Roddy's house, all that was fake. So right. That would answer that question. I just don't know when the Jay White attack happened.
And here's what's clear is we could do the research on that and come up with answers. AEW doesn't care.
Yeah.
They just moved on.
Yeah.
Like it's like, why even bother? They don't think it's important. They have completely moved on. And now you've got Strong, Taven, and Bennett looking like a ROH threesome who aren't really ready for national prime time. I mean, they're not serious people. They're not a serious main event act, and it's pulling Adam Cole down, and he can't even wrestle yet. So it's just all that led to this. It led to Strong Taven trying to look more serious, Bennett trying to look more serious, but they look uncomfortable. They look like they're not comfortable being serious people. They don't want to be in a serious group. And so it's just not a fierce, threatening faction. And so, I don't know. You can't build around that foursome and for that to be the payoff and to have them just blow off what happened and not giving people any kind of the audience the respect of explaining what happened when. and even addressing it. And it's like they can't be bothered, or they think if they start drawing attention to it, there'll be timeline inconsistencies because it wasn't well planned out, or they had some twists and turns that they had to deal with. I mean, let's just call it what it is. It's a disappointing follow-up, and I don't think it's going to be an effective heel group.
Yeah, because they needed to be what the Bloodline was, and because the Bloodline has been strong even when Roman Reigns is not there.
Yep.
And because you do not have
they have Wardlow
because
but...
of Ginger. No, I'm saying because they don't have Adam Cole there because he's injured. He has to be like in the Roman Reigns, where Roman Reigns is not there half the time. And then, like, you have to have Wardlow be like your version of Solo, you know, that
right.
kind of thing. They needed to be, because what it feels like is that they went from like total goofballs to not as much goofballs,
right?
As opposed to if they really wanted to make this work. I don't know if it's going to work with the people that you have, but if they really want to make it work, they need to become really vicious, really, like, you know, bloody some people up, kind of vicious, you know.
And I love watching a good TV show or good movie, and I'm like, I can't imagine anyone else cast for the parts. Like, casting directors can be underrated when it comes to how much a movie or a TV series works. You're like, I can't imagine with that script in this series, anyone else in that role. Then we can think of some of the top movies and top TV series and just think about that. Like, even sitcoms, like, you can't imagine Cheers without Ted Danson on top, or, you know, whatever. I mean, that's sort of dated, but it's hopefully a timeless show. So Taven and Bennett and Roderick Strong are not the people you would cast for what you aspire this new heel faction coming out of the Devil storyline to be. And Wardlow can be part of it. There's no growth. There's no transformation with Wardlow. He's the same guy, just sort of standing there, seeming somewhat like an empty vessel towering over everybody. And, you know, reacting a little bit here and there, but mostly looking like he just can't wait to get back to the gym to strain and lift heavy things. And that's just not really compelling. It's underwhelming. And you're right. It should have been a Bloodline type thing, with all the time they put into it. But if Strong, Bennett, and Taven are going to be three out of the five pieces, and Adam Cole is hurt, and Wardlow is not going to grow as a character, I mean, I'm not impressed.
Yeah, Wardlow would probably, with Adam Cole hurt, Wardlow would have had to basically be like the clear number two, and then just be, you know, he should have been leading the, you know, I'm just going to kill everybody on the roster until we get our way. As much as, like, I've always been of like mixed minds with the whole NWO always getting involved in everything. They kind of had to pull some stuff from their playbook and just start like causing a ruckus and just, you know, destroying things when it's not even their point. Because if you're doing the whole we're the real devils, you know, you need to basically really own that. As it is, it just feels like it basically became like a mid-tier group. Immediately after defeating, you know, and taking out MJF, and it's like, wow, you spent all this time and injuries and stuff, all that stuff aside, you don't need to basically face plant the ending. You could have pivoted to something else, you know?
Yeah, yep, totally. Okay, so I still want to talk about Jay White too, because this kind of is related, and I was deciding if I wanted to combine two things into one, and I decided that was a bad idea, but Jay White and the Guns going after the ROH six-man titles. This is not – Jay White should be protected more than being part of a segment where Austin Gunn is humping his hip as a variation on Prince Nana's dance. And I like Jay White. I think he's got a real – for all kinds of reasons, in the ring and charismatically, facial expression-wise, I think he just oozes an it factor. And AEW is damaging it by putting him – the Guns aren't as bad as Taven and Bennett, because Taven and Bennett are like mid-card goofs. And Austin and Colton, I think, especially Colton, there's more of an edge to Colton and there's more credibility to what they do. But it's not ideal. Even for Jay White. And so I'm watching this. I'm like, that's where we are now? You've lost CM Punk. Adam Cole is hurt. Kenny Omega's out indefinitely. Bryan Danielson is winding down. At least you got Hangman Page back with a little bit more of an edge. But Jay White's going after the ROH six-man titles. What are they even doing being mentioned on AEW television? Much less saddling Jay White with a little sojourn into caring about those. He should be above it. And so it's just another, like, that faction has more potential, but they should aim, frankly, higher than going after the Mogul Embassy, who are more often on TV now than they had been, but they're just seen as sort of visitors from ROH here and there when bodies are needed in the ring. Javier.
Yeah. I mean, Jay White is currently probably one of my favorite wrestlers up there. And I do think that he should be involved at the top level in AEW when they start talking about, like, you know, because when they mentioned the we may go for the trios title, I'm like, okay, well, that's putting them up against these guys again. And then they're like, okay, well, maybe Jay White goes for a singles title and Austin and Colt go for tag team titles in order to get, like, that quote-unquote, you know, bang-bang scissor gang thing. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're going to give them all titles, if that's what they're going to go for, that's what I thought. But when they said, oh, we're going to go for the ROH titles, I'm like, oh, man.
I know.
I mean, you know, the thing about Jay White's done that, and that happens in New Japan, because, you know, when your top guy, you know, sometimes like right now, their version of the six-man tags is Okada is holding that, is one of the members of that group. They do that to get people, you know, when your top guy's not involved in the top thing, but Jay White has not really been established as a top guy, you know, because they haven't really done anything with him outside of I thought one of the best parts of MJF's run was when the stuff, you know, when he was involved with Jay White, you know, because that, and the thing is, I love the promo. I just hate the fact that it was for the stupid ROH titles. And correct me if I'm wrong, did Tony Khan say that we're not going to get more mentions of ROH on TV about a year ago?
Yeah.
You know, yep. And you know, and we've seen, like, how many times? I mean, hell, the whole crown thing involved a ROH title. Yep. You know, did we not have a pure title on one of these shows defended?
Yep.
You know, so it feels like the ROH titles are just like, oh well, we don't want to take the titles off of these guys. The sugar is running out. I don't want to take the titles off of the scissors guys. So, you know, let's put the ROH titles into play.
Right.
You know, so it seems like a waste. The total waste.
How many six-man titles are there in New Japan?
There's just the one.
So two or three, because, I mean, more the merrier, right?
It's ridiculous. There are two of them. It makes no sense. I mean, it makes no sense.
And that's the point I made. Jay White's not just going after six-man titles, which, if they were protected and one of just, you know, three titles in the men's division in the company, like, okay, if they're really focused on and important, there's one men's singles, one men's tag team, one six-man. Okay, you know, and if it's only top people, fight for it. But it's for the ROH ones against
I did when I saw the ROH pay-per-view, I had no idea who were the the trios titles for that. As a matter of fact, I had forgotten who the AEW trios titles were for a bit there.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I can't for the life of me really remember the name of Orange Cassidy's title. It's the international.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I still call it the NATO title. You know, it's like, yeah. I mean, it's just way too many titles, and it feels like it's only out when you want to tell a. He wants to tell a story and just, you know, make it a little bit more because the title's involved, instead of it just being about, you know, even people finding out, you know, who I can't believe who's going to win this. You know, it's been kind of this, you know, it's annoying.
All right. Couple more things before I wrap up here. Deonna Purrazzo, or however Tony Schiavone pronounced her name several times, against Red Velvet. The goes 7 minutes. They tried to, you know, talk up Red Velvet a bit, but this was, you know, clearly meant to be a showcase for Purrazzo making her in-ring AEW debut. What did you think of her presentation, and what do you think of her as in addition to an improved AEW women's division, as Kevin Kelly was pushing?
I like Purrazzo a lot. She reminds me of Bryan Danielson without the striking part of it. So like in the technical, you know, holds aspect.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yep. I know what you mean.
Very similar. Very similar. Yep. I like her a lot. I think that she should watch a lot of Zack Sabre Jr. tapes because I think that's where she'd probably be best at if she could basically do what he – become the female version of him basically, mm-hmm. Of just like stretching people, maybe some Timothy Thatcher stuff and become more of that because I think that's where her like the best thing – I think she's somebody who could be in the mix at the top, but she's not going to be like, okay, we've got a star. We have a woman star here who we're going to give the title and give a, you know, and like build an entire division around her. I think she's someone who could be in the mix based on the stuff I've seen with her on Impact. Because, you know, on Impact, she could, you know, she was a top guy, the top woman on Impact for a lot of it and did a good job, but Impact is definitely different from when you start getting into the big league. So I do think she's someone who could contend, be involved, maybe even hold the title for a while, but not someone you necessarily like. She's going to be my first draft pick.
And give a minute of analysis to what you saw with Julia Hart and Anna Jay tonight, Julia winning in 11 minutes. Anything stand out to you in that match, and how you feeling about Julia Hart holding one of two women's titles with AEW on the logo? AEW, I don't know if AEW is on the TBS logo, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I actually paid close attention to this one because, you know, in my mind, I'm still remembering Julia Hart, the cheerleader, because many of the matches she's been involved with, I haven't been really too engaged with. So I was watching it closely, and I like her how she's developed because, and this was a match that was actually since I see the feed without the you know, when they go to the side-by-side thing, I keep watching it. Since she gets most of the offense, you know, the heel gets most of the offense during the actual commercial break, I was paying attention to what she was doing, and she's, like, engaged with the match in a way that, like, Anna Jay isn't, because Anna Jay, you could kind of tell she's still thinking through things. You know, like for example, she gets whipped to the corner, and you could see how she slows down before hitting the corner.
Yeah.
There was another moment where she's going to like splash or something, Julia Hart in the corner, and Julia Hart's going to put her legs up, and you could see Anna Jay slow down before she, you know, takes the bump. So you could tell she's still thinking, you know, you can see it, like she's thinking, okay, what's my next spot? I didn't see that from Julia Hart. She was like, when she was like grabbing a body part and doing stuff, she looked engaged, that she was actually engaged with the wrestler. She was in there. Her acting in there was good. So I really enjoyed. I really liked the. It didn't feel like she was thinking through her stuff. So I was actually pretty impressed with how how much she's improved.
Can you explain what was going on? I mean, I know the larger point, but what was going on with Sanjay Dutt, Jay Lethal, Karen Jarrett, Jeff Jarrett, with Sanjay Dutt showing up with food and shoving it in Jay Lethal's face, and Jay being upset. I mean, they're. We're coming out of the Continental Classic, and the idea is, yeah, Jay Lethal is kind of like Danny Garcia. The tournament was a wake-up call to get a little more serious and you know, get refocused. But this was a weird segment to tell that story.
Yeah, I don't know. Did you get the same thing I got from it, that Karen was defending Jay Lethal?
Because
it kind of felt like Karen was defending Jay Lethal. So like if they split, Karen would be going with Jay Lethal and Dutt would be going with Jeff Jarrett. It's almost
Dutt was upset because Jay, he said, I'm your best friend. You wouldn't have a job if it weren't for me. But what I remember about Karen is she was venting about they don't have their merch. They don't have merch yet. And I don't. So is that complaining about Dutt not running the business side well? And that's why they're going to split. But do we really want to see Jeff versus Karen in any format where Karen's managing Jay and Sanjay's managing Jeff? I mean, I was going to say I joke about this. I don't joke. It's serious. AEW is full of clusters of little cliques of people who enjoy working with each other. And they're in their little groups and they in their little micro booking sessions. And they come up with ideas so that they can just keep wrestling each other in new ways. You know, Bucks and Hangman and Dark Order, for example, and Kenny. You got Moxley and Danielson and Claudio and Yuta. And then they kind of, you know, they, oh, Eddie Kingston, he's going to feud with each of us in different ways because they all like each other.
And Jericho, yeah, Jericho group, Jericho's people.
And the Jericho's people, oh, no, no, exactly. I mean, it's just like I could go on. And, you know, you got Britt Baker and her people, and you have Miro and himself. You know, I mean, like, there's so much click. There's so many clicks, and I know there's wrestlers that don't want to work with other wrestlers. I know there's people Roman Reigns doesn't want to work with. I've heard, you know, oh, that match will never happen. I mean, people in power have that. But in AEW, it's like there's all these little micro book groups. And so it feels like, yeah, Jeff's in his little comfort zone, and they're going to do their little thing from, you know, the TNA alum and Sottenham doing comedy. I don't know. I mean, that's what it seems like. Yeah, I mean, that's what seems like is happening here. It's not like Jay's going to branch off and feud with or a team with Mark Briscoe, which would have been my pick coming out of that. I just think have Jay and Mark team up and go after tank belts and like ride some momentum, but they're going to be that little dynamic they had, I think, is just going to be lost.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Cause I mean, I've followed them, you know, some of the stuff they did cause they were the two that were involved in the Ric Flair retirement match. So they've been working together for quite a while, the two of them. So I'm not saying I'm like totally opposed to seeing them fight each other, not on AEW pay-per-view though, or an AEW show. Not even AEW, maybe Rampage, maybe. But like, yeah, I mean, it's like, it was just an odd choice to do this here when instead of, for example, promoting the Hook match, maybe having Samoa Joe. I mean, it does feel like maybe the Hook having a match kind of felt like a last minute addition, like, you know, for real. So maybe have Samoa Joe have cut a promo somewhere and saying, oh yeah, I just saw the match and yeah, you did a good boy and, you know, and then cut a promo on it, something like that. That would have been probably better time spent than doing this. So,
Yep. Javier, I'll just throw to you. Is there anything else in your notes or that stood out to you that you want to cover before we wrap up tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I literally just copy and paste the J.D. Drake stuff that we talked about the other one, because that's exactly what I felt like. Too long. I enjoyed the match. I'm a fan of J.D. Drake. I was watching when he was on Evolve, and he was involved in some stuff there. So I like him in the way that, you know, he's a very Eddie Kingston type of character, but again, he's one of those guys that he's never around, so... I think this ends up, you know, why did Hangman Page take so long? Let me see. One thing about Dynamite during I don't know. Does Taz listen to this? Because I don't want to get in trouble with Taz.
I am not allowed to say. I would say that if you ask me about anyone, not just Taz.
He was a wuss on the when they went to commercial. He spent every commercial break basically talking about how cold he was.
Oh, funny!
whining about the weather. And like at one point, he's like, "Oh yeah, it was so much nice having the Samoa Joe entrance. He's got pyro now. It's like, you know, it felt nice because it was warm."
Wow.
He spent a lot of time during the commercial break whining about that. And there was something, let me see if I could, what match was it in? During the Anna Jay, Julia Hart match. I think all this happened during the commercial break where Julia Hart had gotten Anna Jay in the corner with, you know, and was like, you know, putting a submission hold in the ropes. Mm-hmm. And the referee was trying to break them up, and Hart is yelling, you know, this is house rules. There's no rope break. And then, you know, the announcers to cover, I think it might have been Shivani who said, maybe he's not aware of it, or maybe he's trying to pull over one on. She might be playing Mike Posey for a fool. And Kevin Kelly said, "Now that's too hard to do." Shivani said, "Kevin Kelly, ladies and gentlemen." Kelly said, "What do you want from me? He's from Alabama." And Shivani said, "Kevin Kelly, ladies and gentlemen."
Wow.
That was an exchange that happened during that moment. But yeah. So I think that's pretty much. Oh, and I mentioned to in the
after the on that,
after the show was over.
On TNT,
the TNT feed, Cassidy rolled out of the ring, and then Edge's music hit, and Edge, FTR, and Daniel Garcia, beat up on the Undisputed Kingdom. So.
Cool. Very good. Javier, thanks. Been fun.
Yeah. So, happy to join you. And thank you for spoiling the Dolphins game, which I actually left recording. So.
Well, you got to give me a heads up.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I was following it on my phone. So.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just giving you a hard time since you're always like, oh, don't talk about the sports game. And then you said, oh, not a contested or whatever. I forgot what words you were.
I forgot what words I used too, but I'll just say the actual thing I said is it was a football game that I'm not going to give away anything about because Javier, I don't know if you've watched it yet. That, I think I said something to that effect.
Yeah, we'll watch it on rewind the tape. So.
Yes, go enjoy your Dolphins and Kansas City Chiefs. It was this is not about what's on the field, but man, the NFL has lost popularity because there are very few people in the stands. Like the lower deck, lower bowl is mostly full, but almost nobody in the upper deck. NFL has some real problems, Javier, based on having that on a second screen experience tonight. What's going on?
Yeah, well, it probably was the -5 temperature.
Yes, of course.
I knew there was going to be trouble once I saw that, like, the temperatures. Like, it feels like they've never had a good game in, like, cold weather temperatures. Okay. So I'm like, oh, well. Yeah.
So this was my thought with the game on in the background. I think they should have switched all the players every play, including the quarterback. They should have two quarterbacks playing, two sets of offensive linemen, wide receivers, everybody. They run off the field after every play, and a whole new group runs on, kind of like hockey where there's line changes. And everyone just goes stands next to a heater in between plays. So the team that does that, it would be totally unconventional. But, I mean, there were so many drop passes, you know, just frozen fingers. And, you know, the ball is like this just rock that with no give. Just literally, I'd rather have B-level players out there who are warm in between every play, just jogging on and off the field, because you can afford to jog off and on the field if you get every other play off. Then you can rest, but you're also staying warm because you're running. So that would have been my unconventional, and this is why I'm not paid to be an NFL head coach, because there's probably something terribly wrong with this idea. But when it's 27 below zero, that's what it feels like, according to the graphic on the screen, why not be unconventional and just have your quarterback work every other play? There's one point where they were like running off and on the field to like switch helmets. I don't even know what that was about. But why not just stay warm on the sidelines in between plays and have two teams like the NHL having line changes?
I mean, at that point, it might be that people's ears freeze to the stupid to the helmet, you know?
Yeah.
My mother came over and said, there are people out there without sleeves on. They're players without sleeves on. She's worried about them. I'm like,
there was a guy shirtless dancing. He wasn't even a fat guy, like with the layers of like. He was this like really fit looking guy. He kind of had like Danny Garcia's physique, and or hooks or something, like just a thin fit guy. And he's shirtless. It's 27 below, and he's happy and dancing. And I'm just like, dude.
I'll tell you what. I've always been a big guy, and when I was in high school, was in Washington D.C., and it was like that level temperature. A girl I liked was freezing, so I'm like, I'm gonna give her my jacket. Biggest regret of my life. I was like, oh, yeah, I could take it. I'm a big dude. I could take it. And it was like, oh, nope.
your skin still gets cold. I was like layered up today, and it was below zero or around zero. Maybe it was below zero. I think it was like 5 below zero today. And I took my dog to the dog park, and I was like had 4 layers of clothing and like 3 hats and a face mask. And I was totally comfortable. Like, you can dress for warmth in cold weather, but you can't stay cold in 120 degree weather or 110 degree humid weather. You can't stay comfortable. But it was, you know, it was cold today, and you know, around 0 degrees, and I was out with my dog for 45 minutes and was not at all affected by it. But I didn't see anybody in the crowd for a 3-hour football game dressed like me taking my dog to the dog park for 45 minutes. I mean, I would have been so bundled up, no one could recognize me, and that people just didn't dress appropriately for that experience.
And I'm dying for us to either get a heat wave or a cold wave, because like the temperatures that now like the AC doesn't kick off, and it's I'm sweating right now. It is hot where I am right now because I'm by the computer, and I'm like, I wish the temperature either dropped or went up so the AC could kick on. I'll be fine. Hate this temperature. It's like 75 here. So
well, it is It is -6 at this exact moment in Minnesota, and I have a space heater going in the studio here, and I'm comfortable, but I'm not. I would not want to go outside for very long right now.
Oh man! Oh, and
at least not without a lot of layers. Yeah.
Forget. How's your cap width?
Thank you. I haven't thought about it all day. Let's see where the knot was. It's still a little sore. Yeah, it's still a little sore. My dog charged and headbutted me 2 days ago, running full speed.
Is the same animal creating the injury?
Yeah, yeah.
Does he know that you have life insurance? Because that
he wouldn't know what to do with himself if I were to go away. We're very close. He's curled up next to me right now in the chair next to my desk here. So he is not going. He doesn't want any material things. He just wants more of my time. And more of my eye contact and attention. So he is definitely not doing it on purpose. And actually, mostly it was a neighbor dog that hurt my knee. Him, I just, you know, yes, he did headbutt my calf. But at least I didn't have to go to see a doctor the next day, like when my knee injury happened. But yeah, Kavir, really, what matters most? Thank you for asking. I mean, it shows you care.
And you're welcome.
All right. Thanks. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Yeah, have a good night.
Thanks, everybody.